So we're back with you, Mr. Stevens.
All right, Judge.
Glad you didn't have to go out and hyperventilate or anything.
Go out and lick my wounds. Leland Bates raises an entirely different issue in this appeal. Leland Bates was granted a sentence reduction. He was granted the full two-level reduction, and he requested a reduction in excess of the two levels provided by the guideline imposed by the promulgated by the Sentencing Commission. Now, what I'm not arguing is that Booker creates an independent ground for a reduction of sentence. I think that's been addressed by a number of courts and pretty uniformly has decided that Booker was not retroactive. Booker does not create an opportunity to go back address a sentence that does not fall into the guidelines. What I am arguing is that once a court acquires jurisdiction via...
What about the appeal waiver in this case?
There was no appeal waiver. At least the government has not raised an appeal waiver in this case, Your Honor.
We have a motion to dismiss, in this case, filed by the government.
I stand corrected, Your Honor, but I'll leave my remarks to the court's decision in the remaining three cases.
Oh, wait a second.
It's identical language, right?
Yes.
Does the same waiver language in the earlier cases apply to Bates? Right?
That's correct.
Okay.
So Mr. Bates did receive a new sentence in this case. That's the difference between this and the prior cases. The prior cases involved an order denying granting a new sentence. If there is a line that distinguishes them, that would be the line, because this is a new sentence, not the old sentence. And I think that the 11th Circuit, for instance, addressed that in the Corrath case cited in the brief, which was a violation of supervised release, where they said a subsequent proceeding is not covered by an appeal waiver. With regard to Mr. Bates...
Well, that's different. That's very different. A revocation proceeding, of course, raises very different issues. This is just a this is just a resentencing.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that a revocation proceeding increases the sentence. A 3582 decreases the sentence, but both of them are new sentences. Issue.
But you're your probation or supervised release is revoked because you commit a new crime or some other violation. And you can see why that would be regarded as a new proceeding rather than as post-conviction relief, right?
Well,
but this is just a challenge to his sentence.
Back to the issue of the post-conviction relief, if a court can... raise a 3582 motion sua sponte, that is not a post-conviction proceeding by the defendant.
You still have the appeal waiver to cope with.
But if the defendant triggers that same motion, that's essentially no different proceeding.
It's not in the appeal waiver.
The language in the appeal waiver, and without beating a dead horse, the language in the appeal waiver says, my sentence, it's included in the plea agreement as to that charge,
well,
as to those proceedings.
Of course it says my sentence. It's my sentence, not your sentence. How would you make this unambiguous?
I would make this unambiguous by saying my sentence in this case are all future cases.
Or all future cases, please.
Or
that would be ridiculous.
Or future sentences.
Future proceedings regarding these charges might be a better way to put it. Or I would specifically include 3582 as a waiver, as many United States Attorney's offices are in fact now doing. That takes any ambiguity out of it.
It sure does.
It just injects new ambiguities. Right?
Well, I suspect that defense attorneys will...
582, then what about 2255?
Well, 2255 is included in there already, Judge.
Standard. And that 2255 inclusion is standard language now, right, in all of the agreements.
In the Northern District of Indiana, virtually all plea agreements have essentially this same language in them, if not identically this same language.
But I mean with the specific reference to 2255.
2255 is specifically included in virtually all plea agreements. That's correct. 3582 is not currently included, or at least not in any apps I've seen since all of this started. I suspect we may see it in the future.
Yes.
The issue in Leland Bates, in addition to the appeal waiver, is that once a court acquires jurisdiction, and at least this is my position, once a court acquires jurisdiction, a court then has the right to conduct a sentencing proceeding via the statutory – 3553 factors. Sentencing guidelines are only a factor in establishing that sentencing. The
doesn't make a lot of sense to me. This is just a mandatory minimum, in effect, isn't it? So you can drop so far but no farther.
There is a difference between a mandatory minimum, and that's precisely the issue addressed in Booker. The Supreme Court has not said that Congress has no authority to establish mandatory minimums. In fact, Congress does have the authority to say you can't be sentenced to less than this particular sentence. The Supreme Court has said is that guidelines established by the Sentencing Commission may not be a guideline range established by the Sentencing Commission may not be mandatory and binding on the judge. In this case, a shift in the guideline range triggers the court's jurisdiction to consider a 3582 motion. There was such a shift. There was that allowed the district court to grant up to, under the guidelines, a two-level reduction. So the guideline range shifted down. Because it shifted down, the court gained jurisdiction. Now, at that point, the issue is, may the court treat the sentencing guideline range as non-mandatory? May it depart below that guideline range for the various factors under 3553? May the court reconsider its sentence, saying at the time the original sentence was imposed, I was bound by the guidelines, but the Supreme Court says that guideline range, if applied in a mandatory fashion, is unconstitutional. So may I impose a sentence that, if it were imposed in this fashion today as an original sentence, would be unconstitutional? And my answer to that, of course, is the court may not treat that guideline range.
But before this amendment, could the court have given a lighter sentence?
Court could not have given a lighter sentence before
Booker.
It's only the shift in the guideline range that triggers the jurisdiction.
The guidelines, which why should that shift give him this windfall, this right to a lower sentence, which he couldn't have gotten before the shift? It just doesn't make. I don't see the sense.
Did he get a lower sentence?
He got a lower sentence.
What relief do you seek?
We're seeking an instruction to the court that the court may consider a sentence even below the guidelines.
Send it back down and tell him the obvious.
I'm sorry?
Send it back down and tell him the obvious.
It's not obvious at all, because Judge Miller has ruled consistently that he has no authority to go below those guidelines.
You want us to tell him he does have authority.
And I'm simply seeking a decision from this court, which this court has not decided yet.
Anything you're saying connect to the logic of Booker, the Sixth Amendment concerns with Booker that animate Booker. How is that involved here?
Well, simply that the drug quantity amount determined by the court determines the sentencing guidelines even after the shift downwards of the guidelines. Booker says that the drug quantity in a mandatory guideline range scheme must be determined by a jury. It obviously was not. the guideline range, therefore, must be non-mandatory. It must be non-binding on the court. The court must have the discretion to consider that guideline range, but also a sentence outside of that guideline range.
Shift in the guideline, presumably authorized by Congress, lowered a minimum, right?
This shift in the guidelines did not lower a minimum. This shift in the guidelines lowered a guideline range. I'm not sure if that was the court's question.
I thought before this change, but these people had been sentenced already, so this guideline gives them a lower, they had a lawful sentence, this guideline allows them to get a reduction, right?
That's correct. This guideline,
they had a lawful sentence, why couldn't the Sentencing Commission attach any conditions it wanted to a lowering of a range?
Well,
if it's just bailing out some people who have lawful sentences, just doing them a favor. It's not constitutionally required.
The Sentencing Commission established a sentencing guideline range, and the Supreme Court said that is not constitutional. They have again established a guideline range.
On this case, before this guideline change, your client had a lawful sentence. Isn't that correct?
He had a sentence that was imposed in a lawful manner at the time it was imposed.
A lawful sentence, right.
Booker was not made retroactive, and he had no grounds for relief until 3582 came along.
Yes, but it seems to me Congress is, in effect, saying these people can have a lower sentence. But the Sentencing Commission gets to say how much lower it can be. I don't see how that... What in Booker, what in the policy, the reasoning of the Supreme Court supports your view?
I think the reasoning that supports this view is that the Supreme Court said that a guideline range established by the Sentencing Commission...
That's the conclusion. Now, why did the Supreme Court do that, and how does it bear on this case?
The Supreme Court said that the Sixth Amendment requires that anything that... increases a sentence must be determined.
We're not talking about a sentencing increase.
In fact, we are, because the guideline range increases the sentence above the range established by Congress, or above the... Mr. Bates was charged with 50 grams or more of crack cocaine.
We're not talking about increasing his sentence. We're talking about reducing his sentence.
You're not going to win, you know.
my time has expired. I'll be glad to try to respond if you want a response, Judge Boser.
No, we'll leave it.
Thank you, Judge.
Okay, so, I'm sorry. I completely forgot about Mr. Grimmer, who is still here.
He thought you already done his job for him.
Sorry.
Your Honor, my name is Donald Schmidt. Leland Bates case.
My mistake, Mr. Schmidt.
Maybe I should sit down, given the way things went for Mr. Stevens.
You were doing such a good job. You're taking your job.
I should relinquish my time to Judge Posner.
No, you don't even resemble Mr. Grimmer. No, my mistake was unforgivable. Go ahead.
Your Honor, in this case, the defendant wants to try to extend Booker and its reasoning to a 3582 reduction. Sentence reduction proceeding, and it simply doesn't work. First of all, the obvious. Booker does not literally apply to this case because Booker did not address 3582C, the congressional statute that allows for a sentencing reduction and a modification of sentence in a very limited circumstance. And Booker did not address Section 1B1.10, which contains the Sentencing Commission's policy statements on sentencing reduction situations and amendments. Nor does Kimbrough or Gall deal in any way with Section 3582 or Section 1B1.10 or post-conviction sentence reduction proceedings at all. So the question really becomes, would the Supreme Court extend Booker to 3582C if it were faced with that precise issue? Or stated differently, is the Sixth Amendment violated in any way or could possibly be violated in any way in a 3582C proceeding where the court adheres to the Sentencing Commission's policy statements contained in Section 1B1.10. And that policy statement, to be clear, as of March of 2008, says that in the crack amendment situation, the district court cannot reduce the sentence below the two-level reduction authorized in Amendment 706 and 711. The answer to those questions, would Booker be extended here, and is there any Sixth Amendment problem, is plainly no. Why? First of all, there is no judicial fact-finding at a 3582 sentence reduction proceeding that raises the defendant's sentence in any way. As Judge Posner absolutely accurately pointed out when talking with Mr. Stevens, the only possibility in a 3582 proceeding is for a sentence reduction. There is no possibility of any kind of increased punishment by the defendant at all. There is literally nothing a judge can do to increase the punishment that a defendant faces. As a result, there is simply no Sixth Amendment issue.
You can only punish the lawyers. He
can't. Exactly. And Booker simply would not be extended. There's still a second and third reason why Booker would not be extended to a 3582C sentence reduction proceeding. Fundamentally, 3582C is a discretionary remedy. The court does not have to lower the sentence. The court has the discretion to lower the sentence considering 3553A factors. And finally,
counsel says that the judge thinks he does not have such discretion.
I think what counsel meant there, Your Honor, is that Judge Miller was clear that he could not go below the two-level reduction, but in even deciding whether to grant the two-level reduction or something short of the two-level reduction, the court has complete discretion under the terms of 3582 and Section 1B1.10. Finally, this court has made clear in its prior decisions, including the Tidwell case, that 3582C is not a de novo sentencing. In fact, the court put it this way, it's not a do-over. As a result of that, it's not a new sentencing. It's a very unique species of modification of sentence, and it's a unique species because it can only go down. It's a one-way lever down. It cannot be increased, and so there is simply no Sixth Amendment issue. Booker would not be extended to this context. There can be constitutionally valid limits on district court action in sentencing. One of those limits is a mandatory minimum sentence. There's nothing prohibited in the Sixth Amendment or under Booker for mandatory minimum sentence.
When Congress passes a law saying the sentence shall be not less than nor more than, which they have been doing since, as near as I can tell, 1789, we're stuck with that. We can't.
That's right. And Booker specifically preserved the mandatory minimum sentence by saying that the case of McMillan versus Pennsylvania was not being overruled. This is, in effect, the equivalent of Congress saying there is a statutory minimum here, and there's nothing improper about Congress saying in order to get a sentence reduction, it can't go below this level, which is effectively what has been done here. The defendant in this case and other defendants in other cases that are coming up before you have relied on a Ninth Circuit case, an outlier called Hicks, decided in January of 2007, and there's four fundamental problems with Hicks. First of all, Hicks is simply wrong. The Sixth Amendment, there is no Sixth Amendment issue here because it only goes down as a sentence reduction. The fundamental error of Hicks in its reasoning is its erroneous belief that the sentencing guideline ranges cannot be mandatory, quote, in any context. Of course they can be mandatory in a case where the sentencing maximum, the punishment of the defendant, is not increased by judicial fact-finding. That was the heart and soul of Booker. It was judicial fact-finding coupled with an increase in the defendant's sentencing exposure or punishment exposure. Here that simply isn't present. the clear weight of decisional authority, including in the Fourth Circuit, the Eighth Circuit, and district courts across the country, disagree with this single outlier case of Hicks in the Ninth Circuit. Also, Hicks is easily distinguishable. Hicks was not dealing with Section 1B1.10 as it exists now. It wasn't even dealing with the floor that was created by Section 1B1.10. The 1B1.10, as it existed at the time of Hicks, didn't tell the district courts what they would do or how they should handle the amended range. It left that to the discretion of the courts. Now the Sentencing Commission told district courts, with Congress's specific sanction, that you can't go below this two-level crack amendment reduction. So Hicks wasn't even dealing with the same statute, and it shouldn't have precedential value here. Finally, I would argue that Hicks conflicts with this court's prior decisions, both in Tidwell, in which this court said that 3582 sentence reduction proceedings are not do-overs, and also this court's more recent decision in Lawrence this year, in which the court said that the district court errs if it sentences outside the boundaries of the applicable guideline policy statements in granting a sentence reduction. For all these reasons, Your Honor, I believe that Judge Miller had it correct in believing that he could not go below the two-level authorized by the crack amendment statute. He did get a sentence reduction. He went from 51 months to 41 months, but he's asking for more, and he's simply not entitled to more and should not be entitled to more, and I'd ask the court to affirm the district court's decision in this case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schmidt. So, Mr. Stevens, your time expired, but if you want another minute, you may have it.
I'll stand on my comments.
Okay, well, thank you. And so you were appointed in all these three cases, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, well, we thank you very much for your efforts on behalf of your client.